Ready?
Members will call to order this meeting of the Education Finance Committee. Representative Greiling has reviewed the minutes from February 22nd and finds them in order. Moves approval of the February 22nd meeting minutes. Are there any corrections, changes, or additions? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. Members, we're going to hold off on moving the bill before us, but we're going to go ahead and begin the process. And Representative Loon, if you want to go up to the testifiers table, and we'll hold off on making a motion here until just a little bit later. Good afternoon, Representative Loon, to your bill, House File 442.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm very pleased to present House Bill 442 for your consideration today. It is quite simply a bill that would remove the permanent 2% set aside of school revenue for staff development. Currently, under the current biennium that we're operating under, this 2% is under a temporary sort of withhold, if you will. As part of some of our efforts last term when I was in this body and served on a kind of a mandate relief working group, this is one of the things that was included and one of the things that we looked at in trying to give school boards and school districts a little more flexibility with their funds. In this time of economic distress and lack of new revenue for the schools, not being able to provide them with more per pupil money, we have looked at what we could do to try to give the schools more school districts more flexibility with the dollars that they do have. And so that is really what this bill is attempting to do. I think there are some portions of a report that goes to the Minnesota Department of Education. All school districts right now are required to report on their staff development expenditures, how much they're spending, and there's various categories of that. There's a formula within the law and the statute right now as to where those funds go, a certain amount per site based on number of teachers and overall district-wide staff development, things of that nature. So I think some of those pages are perhaps in your packets. Two pages, all right. And anyway, to give you some sense, I also looked at kind of what the impact was in terms of staff development expenditures by school districts under the current temporary lifting of that 2% mandate. And you know, the figures that we have are just from 1 year of the biennium. Obviously, the school districts will report the second after the school year is done. But it did drop slightly from about $155 million to $136 million overall by school districts. But I did note in looking through the report that about half or a little more than 48% of school districts, even under the sort of the lifting of that 2% requirement, are spending 2% or more of their budgets currently on staff development, even though they are not technically mandated by law to do that. I think that is a strong signal that obviously school districts do understand the importance of staff development. It's an important component of what they do in continuing to improve teaching and learning in their schools. We do have a small component of schools who are not doing or expending those funds. It's about 15% of districts. But again, I think when I look at my own school district, I represent the Eden Prairie Schools, they've had to make some very difficult budget decisions. And, under the mandates that often flow with some of the money from our state, it gives them a lot less choice. They've had to do things like stop staffing the resource centers at the high school for children who need help, students who are struggling in that. And the more we can give them options of how they provide services to their students and what's in the overall best interest of their district and their learning and student achievement, I think the better we will all be. So I would ask for your support for this bill.
Thank you. Representative Loon, do you have testifiers you wish to have testify in support or against your bill?
I believe we do have a couple of testifiers that would like to speak in favor of the bill.
And members, what we'll do is we'll allow Representative Loon to present her bill, have her supporters come in, testify. We'll take questions for those individuals. If there's any opponents, we'll let the opponents testify. Questions will take place, and then we'll open it up for public input. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record, sir.
I'm Charlie Kite, and I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. Thank you for hearing from us for a few minutes on this issue. There are three issues that are outstanding and problematic with the 2% staff development set aside. The first of them is just the money. The schools need this money, or at least a portion of it, in order to run their schools, especially at a time when funding is flat or maybe going down. I have not yet heard that Representative Garofalo is starting up his money printing machine for schools, so we think that we are going to need the freedom to use this money to pay for our staff and keep our programs going. The second issue is within this statute, there is a provision that the money that now is reserved or was reserved, 50% of it is held at the district level, 25% at the building level, 25% for innovative type of programs. And that split of money controlled by different parties, it's difficult to come up with a unified district-wide staff development program that really holds together. Now, in some districts they're able to do that, in others they aren't. Third is that under the law that was in place, some of this money was reserved in those sub-accounts and is now held in those sub-accounts, and we're not able to get it out until this law is repealed. Then that money can come back and be used by the district for whatever the uses that would be. There are some counter-arguments that people would use to say you shouldn't repeal this law. One is that there could be an agreement reached between unions and management to not set the full 2% aside. Maybe only set 1% aside. Maybe none. The problem with that is that's not happening everywhere. Some places do it, some places don't. And it often, those agreements often come with stipulations. I think tomorrow you're going to hear from a couple of parties about how negotiations work. I have to share with you that when a concession is made by one party, it often comes with stipulations. So simply waiving this money sometimes ends up with agreements that the money will be put into salaries or a certain area or whatever. And that becomes problematic for us. So we would like to see the 2% staff development side set aside statute repealed. Let the school districts have this money to operate. I can assure you that to the ability of school districts, they will still invest some money in staff development. They know that's important, but it'll allow them to have much more flexibility as they move forward. I'd stand for any questions after the other testifiers testify.
Thank you. What other testifiers do you have, Representative Loon?
Yes, Grace Kelleher from the Minnesota School Boards Association.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Representative Loon and members. My name is Grace Kelleher, and I work for the Minnesota School Boards Association. We are here today supporting Representative Loon's bill. This has been a source where we have come together as a legislative body in the past and relieving school districts of this mandate. As Charlie clearly and concisely pointed out, this is a cost at the local districts that we have to bear. And the pre-sort of the money, that 50-25-25, is really difficult to have uniform staff development activities at the local level. For instance, if you got new technology, or in fact, if you wanted to adopt a new curriculum, you're still hamstrung by these guidelines of where the money goes, and this bill would eliminate that. Certainly, with the temporary suspension, we saw about 7% of school districts opt for the zero option. But I'll say, on the other hand, we had 7% of the districts that opted to give more than they had the year before. So I think the information here should be comforting to you as legislators to show that this is what school districts really value and understand the importance of. And if you let us go ahead and do the right thing at the local level, I think this report clearly shows that we follow that direction. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Loon, I also have Mr. Kroonquist on the list. Is it now the right time for him to come down and testify?
Yes, thank you, okay. Mr. Chairman.
Welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. Scott Kronquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts. I really won't repeat everything you just heard, but we do want to be on the record in support of this legislation, and we thank Representative Loon for bringing it forward, and we hope you'll support it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kronquist. Representative Loon, does that conclude the testifiers you have in favor of this bill?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, to my knowledge.
So members of the committee at this time will take questions for those three testifiers, Mr. Kite, Mr. Kronquist, and Ms. Kelleher, if perhaps they want to station themselves back behind the budget books or make themselves accessible. And we'll start off with Representative Briner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is for Mr. Kite. You referred to the money in the subaccounts and that it might stay there for a period of time. Do you have any information on how much money is currently in subaccounts and districts and unused, and how long, whether it's remained there for a period of longer than a year?
Mr. Kite.
President Briner, members of the committee, I don't have specific numbers. But often when you have a system like this, you don't spend all of the money, or whoever's controlling it in your district doesn't spend it all in the given year. So it gets carried over to the next budget year. But it's in that account. And because it's dedicated to that account, you can't simply lift it out and use it for another purpose. And there's quite a number of districts that do typically have money that kind of carries from one year to another. It's things don't just end and start on June 30th perfectly. So there is a certain amount of money out there that has just been kind of languishing in these accounts that if this legislation is repealed, or if this legislation is passed and we repeal this, that then removes that requirement that money be held there. And I wish I knew the numbers, but I do not.
Representative Bryan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I'm concerned, I think, about whether this is a significant issue or whether it's more of a talking point on behalf of the removal of the mandate, because, I was a board member for a long time. I never saw this in our district. I never knew it to be a problem. I served on the MSBA Delegate Assembly, and I don't have any evidence up to this point that this is a significant issue in terms of district's money management.
Okay. Representative Briner, members of the committee, it is not the core issues are the 2% and the use of that money. That's the big issue. A secondary issue is this 50-25%, 25% split. A more minor issue is this money that is held up. So your decision here probably shouldn't be based on that third point, but it nevertheless is a place where there is some money languishing.
Representative Briner.
Mr. Chair, I'm assuming you want us to save our general questions and comments for after the specific comments to the testifiers.
Absolutely. Thank you, Representative Briner. Representative Greiling, then Fabian, then Ward, then Erickson. Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think Mr. Kite hit the nail on the head when he gave his first point, which is that the schools need money to run them. And, boy, we all do wish Representative Grocklow was doing something with some machine to come up with money for schools, because I think, members, that's why we have these good people coming forward with less than satisfactory requests, getting rid of staff development. And but I am... And a lot of things happening at this legislature this year, getting rid of maintenance of effort for school support staff, for county mental health programs, for libraries, getting rid of pay equity, all those things that local governments did not do well, and that's why we have these laws highlighting how they need to spend some of the money. And I am convinced that Mr. Kite is right why we want to get rid of these and the other things in other committees or here that I mentioned is so we don't have to spend so much money or even any money on them. And that all goes back to the same root of all the problems here, which is our flat funding of schools since 1984, in essence. And my question then is for you, Representative Loon. You said in your opening comments that this is a bill that we need to look at for more flexibility because we are, and I wrote this down, in this time of economic distress. And I'm wondering, why are you permanently repealing this when it's so important, I haven't heard anyone say it isn't important, instead of taking it, acknowledging, as we've done before, that we're in times of economic stress, but we sure, and we're picking then less than satisfactory things to do about it, but why would we want to get rid of this altogether? I'm convinced that this was not happening at our schools. I've heard so much grumbling everywhere I go about this from superintendents and others that they don't want to spend all this money on this, that they can't figure out how to spend it, but yet we can all think of a million things that we want our teachers to do better. So I think people never did like this very well, and now when we have temporary problems, I'm hoping, why do you want to get rid of it permanently?
Well, Representative Loon.
Thank you, and thank you for the question, Representative Greiling. You know, I think perhaps the moving from the current temporary to the permanent is perhaps heightened by the economic distress that is kind of blanketed our states and that the schools have been struggling with. But I think as an overall policy, you know, the legislature telling the school districts what an adequate amount is a questionable way to proceed, in my opinion. You know, and I asked Mr. Strom, one of our researchers, for kind of the history on how the staff development amount came about, and provided me with a little more information on that. And it's kind of been a little bit of a political football back and forth, honestly, between the amount and when it's been changed and when we've had temporary sort of holdbacks on whether or not school districts had to comply with that 2% or not. So I've really come to the position that I don't know that we are in the best persons to make the decisions on how much the schools should be spending. I think we could all agree that staff development is an important component of a school district's operation and keeping their staff apprised of the latest teaching techniques and best practices and how to help student achievement. But whether or not we need to direct specifically how much a district spends on that, I don't feel is an appropriate bar for the legislature to set. And that's another component to the reason I'm bringing this forward as a permanent elimination.
Representative Greiling, did you have a follow-up?
No, I don't, Mr. Chair.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, Representative Brainerd asked the exact question that I had about the sub-accounts, but I will make a comment. We in Roseville, me being a member of the faculty there and so forth, have been involved in the sign-offs over the years on the, you know, the sharing of the funds back to the district so that it can be used for things as they see fit. And we continue to do staff development in my school district. So, thank you.
Representative Ward. Oh, no, don't touch him. It's a long text to figure it out.
Excuse me? Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just some other thoughts have come up since I initially had my initial thoughts. So, you know, I guess I really believe in considering history. I like looking at history and learning from history and, you know, learning from our successes and learning from our mistakes and those kind of things. And I guess, Mr. Kite, I want to ask you this question, Mr. Kite. Can you tell us prior to statute 122A.61 being enacted, what did districts do for staff development prior to that?
Mr. Kite.
Representative Ward and members of the committee, I just for a little bit of a recall, prior to me doing the job that I do now, I spent 20 years as a school superintendent from roughly 1980 to 2000. So that was during that period. School districts, I'll say most school districts, I never want to say all because there's always an outlier somewhere, but most school districts had invested money in professional development of their staff. Some school districts had very inclusive committees that figured out how to do this very well. Some did it more haphazardly. But there's been professional development being done for as long as I have been in this business. I also say that the need for district money somewhat would go up and down over the years because occasionally the federal government would inject money. And then we would use that money instead of the state or the local money. Other years, that money wasn't available. And there were, so there are a lot of different variables that played out here in terms of how we funded this and how it actually was done. But by and large, I think most districts did a reasonably good job of supporting a professional development effort over the years.
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Kite. And I'm glad you're talking about history, Mr. Kite, with your 20 years. I also have a history of 34 years in education. And I remember, you know, being in districts that did a remarkable job of staff development and being in districts that said, make sure you get your continuing ed done. Here's an email not even an email reminder. This was prior to computers even, or the early stages. Make sure you get your continuing ed done. And since the 2% staff development monies have been implemented, I really believe, and I experienced it at in my career during that time as well, and I really believe that the relevance and the importance and the value of staff development has increased and made a bigger impact on our children through the relevance and through the dialogue and discussion of, everybody coming together and saying, this is how we're going to use our 2% of staff development money. And so in current law, there is a, districts are allowed to, use the money as they perceive, just like you said. And Representative Loon, I think that you just said something that was very important, very, very important, is that, this is a local kind of thing. Why are we at the state, going along with Representative Grayling's question, why are we at the state, going to suggest what happens within that local need? Maybe my local educators need to have staff development situation on a certain specific area versus my neighboring school district that has another different need. So, I just think that during this critical financial crisis that we are seeing with our schools, for sure, we need to work together to try to find dollars to go in that classroom, but not at the risk of making our classrooms less productive, less important, less valuable for our students. And I really am concerned about that happening with a straight out repeal of this, because I think that the staff development that has been offered in the later stages of my career was much more effective, efficient, and valuable for our students, transferring into a much more quality education for our students. So I agree with you, Representative Loon, that this is and needs to continue to be a local issue, not so much of a state issue that we determine. And I think our school district has done a remarkable job in offering what is important to them for the best benefit of their local students.
Representative Loon or Mr. Kite, do you have a comment on that?
Representative Ward and members of the committee, I think the quality of professional development and staff development has increased over the years. I don't think necessarily it increased because of this particular statute. I think it increased because there became a growing awareness on the part of everybody in education that we had to become better and better as teachers as we're trying to meet the demand, all the demands of educating our children well. I won't take the time here to recite the fact that prior to this law, as Representative Ward said, there were some schools that simply were just sort of doing this to fill some community ed credits. But I also won't cite the fact that after this law, the 25% that was set aside in some buildings also was not wisely used and was rather used by certain powerful individuals to take whatever, go to whatever conference they want as opposed to the whole group. So there's always some less than optimal use of these monies if you look at the broad picture. And yet what I'm seeing over right now is that most school districts are doing their very best to try to have a good level of professional development. And I think most of them are actually trying to work pretty hard with their professional staffs to do it.
Questions for Representative Loon or the testifiers? Representative Bills.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've also been teaching, though it just seems like such a short time compared to Representative Ward. I know we do get emails about continuing ed credits, and you know, so they don't come on a stone tablet or anything like that. But and that was supposed to be a joke. I actually, I conferred with Representative Dabney if that would be acceptable. But
did Representative Dabney say it was funny?
No.
Perhaps I should not confer.
Representative Bells, I'm not saying you need to listen to Representative Dabney on everything, but on that subject matter, might be a good idea to defer to seniority.
I think it was delivery, and meant no ill will to Representative Ward. I know, and value his years as an educator.
Decades as an educator, is that what it was?
No, I did not say that.
Representative Bills, do you have a question, or are you going to keep digging?
I have a question. I'm going to stop digging now. So there was a, and this actually to Representative Greiling's point in terms of not finding a place to spend it or whatever, and I remember a number of years ago, and staff development sure is, you know, it can be very, very wonderful, and then it can be very elicit certain other comments too, but and I'll never forget. There was a time, I bet 7 years ago, when I said to myself, walking out of a staff development teacher workshop in school, and I said to myself, someday I'm going to be able to tell a lawmaker or somebody who decides the funding for this that this was a complete waste of time, and it would involve a paper plate dance, and we had to, as teachers. Oh, it was, and I'm sure that someone, and just to be fair, I'm sure that some teacher walked out of that activity that day with a great message and took it into the classroom. But so that gets to my point, I guess, is that, you know, Mr. Kite and Representative Loon, you know, to honor, as we as teachers try to honor the diversity of learning and the different learning styles in our classroom, you know, which way is best here so that staff development and districts can honor the diversity of learning and different learning styles of different teachers, you know, because certainly in a faculty you have teachers who have completely different ways that they walk away from an activity and take something into the classroom, like Representative Ward pointed out. So that was my question to you. Thank you.
Representative Loon or Mr. Kite?
Representative Bills and members of the committee. Because we are going to play some one-upsmanship here, Representative Ward, 35 years, I just want to share that I'm in my 43rd year in education. In fact, I started teaching in 1968, and I really wanted to ask Representative Bills what grade he was in at that time, but I won't ask.
What year was it?
Actually, my observation is with what Representative Bills is saying, is that large mass staff development often doesn't work that well because people are in a lot of different places. One observation I have over the last 3, 4, 5 years is that the development of what is called professional learning communities of small groups of teachers coming together around certain subjects has actually been a very good development. Now, I'm not standing here making any comment about the alternative compensation program or not, but to some degree, that program kind of helped this to come into being, and it spread to a lot of school districts, and I think the professional development in school districts is better because of that. So that would be my answer to you.
Representative Bills, do you have a follow-up?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Reinhardt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Excuse me, my first question is for anyone who might be willing to take a stab at it, and that is, does anybody know what the average percentage expenditure is in the private sector for staff development?
Mr. Crow, Mr. Strom, I'm sure you got that on top of your head. And staff is silent. Representative Reinhardt, I think that'd be a pretty difficult stat to follow, but perhaps you have a follow-up or maybe a title?
Well, my point is, and there's been a lot of discussion about this, that 2% is a very modest set-aside for staff development in an organization that is as intensely professionally developmentally oriented as education is. And I find it of the utmost irony that in a time of escalating accountability systems and intensely demanding accountability systems, that we don't see it as our responsibility to help schools protect a certain amount of money for staff development, which is, to me, the most critical tool for improving quality teachers, getting back best practice off the state website into the classroom, helping teachers deal in a hands-on way with formative assessment. This is all about staff development. I think we're long past the paper dance thing, whatever. Our school, I mean, what I know about our staff development teams in our schools is they are very focused on the high demands of accountability and really trying to deal with best practice. PLCs are present in districts that aren't involved in QComp, and because they're such an effective tool for helping teachers begin to take the data they're learning, translate it into best practice in the classroom. So I just don't understand why such a modest measure as a 2% set aside in any way ought to be viewed as an impediment.
Maybe we could ask Representatives Fabian, Bills, or are there any other current teachers? Representative Ward, you don't teach anymore, right? I wonder what percent.
Every day, Mr. Chair. Every day.
I walked into that one, didn't I? Could ask them what percentage of their salary gets contributed to union dues. Wonder what percentage that is. Wonder if that's a modest amount or not. Don't have to answer it. It's okay. Just a commentary.
It's just withheld from my check, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. Representative Breiner. Yeah.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, but I'm actually offended by that. I don't understand the relevance of that comment, the point I'm trying to make about the importance of staff development in a high-demand accountability system.
Representative Breiner, you're offended by my comment?
Yeah.
Why is that?
Well, are you saying that there's other inappropriate set-asides? What's the implication of your comment?
There is no implication of my comment. I just made a commentary about my thoughts on union dues as a percentage of getting taken out of teachers' paychecks.
Why would
Representative Breiner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Why would you make such a comment in the context of a staff development discussion?
I was making the context in the discussion of a modest discussion of amount of money. That was my context. It had nothing to do with staff development.
All right. Well, Mr. Chair, I find it inappropriately directed, but that's
Representative Breinert, I wasn't directing my comment at you. I commented on Representative Fabian and Representative Bills, who are current teachers. Representative Breinert, hold on. Representative
Breinert. Mr. Chair, I simply didn't understand its placement in the context of the discussion. That's all.
Representative Greiling, I don't like, I always play that trick in committees where I move to the front of the line by saying to that point, but I'm going to let you do it, but we're not going to make that a practice of this committee. So, Representative
Greiling. Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know I didn't either, but this one I think is quite serious. And I know that when you first became the chair of this committee, you told me that the sorts of things you did on the House floor last year, you know, making all these flamboyant statements and bashing the unions and so forth, that you were now, as the chair, you weren't going to make those, I'm going to say smart-ass, but I'll say reckless statements anymore in your chair seat. So I just want to caution you, not especially in light of the union rallies in Wisconsin going on, and I noticed in your Twitter you're back to kind of doing those union-bashing things, to think of your higher self that you told me you were going to be as the chair, more of moderating force and not taking those kind of cheap shots. And I would caution you sternly and severely and motherly not to do those anymore.
Well, this is a good conversation to have, and I guess this is why we've got an hour and 10 minutes, so we can talk about this. I just want to make sure I understand this, that my comments about saying that Representative Bills and Representative Fabian, who have no choice in the matter, have money taken out of their paychecks, that this is controversial, and that this is somehow, the comments that you had, I just want to make sure that's what, did I say something else besides that, or that's what's controversial? I just want to make sure I understand. Representative Greiling.
Mr. Chair, and we're talking about digging here, when we were talking to Representative Bills, and I would caution you that you're kind of doing that now as well. It's not so much what you said if we had a bill in front of us that was dealing with getting rid of PELRA or bargaining rates, but it's the kind of slapdash way of throwing it in as a rejoinder to Representative Breiner's very serious comments about the importance of setting aside a paltry 2% for teacher or staff development in our school budgets. And I think if we were serious about this issue, we'd all be very sorry to see that it's come to this, that we can't afford to ask our school districts to set aside this amount of money. But it's your throwing in the union issue out of context and not related to this bill, and in a kind of a uncharily way, that I'm taking great exception to, and I think Representative Breinert is right to be offended by your comments and, you know, throwing this in regard to her comments when you're sitting in the chair's role or really any other role in this around this table.
Okay, so Representative Growling, it wasn't my comment per se, it was the timing of it.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Growling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Even if we were having that bill, some bill of that under consideration, I still think it was a less than professional way to make that comment, but then at least it would be in context. But the way you just did it, it wasn't in context, and I think it was rather disrespectful to Representative Breinert and to teachers in general.
Yeah. Well, Representative Breinert, it was not my intent to disrespect you or to say anything bad about you. It was more of a commentary on current events and my opinions, and the chair, as all members should be mindful of what comments he's what he is saying or what they are saying. So you know, if I have a problem with you, I'll always tell you, so I'm not going to backhand you. But Representative Breinert, do you want to comment on that?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I did not take that as a directed toward me in a personal manner. I felt it was a bit undermining to the level of discussion I was trying to engender around the importance of staff development.
Good. Representative Dabney, to this point, as I break the rule a second time, Representative
yes.
Dabney?
Hold on, let me get a hash mark down for the second time. I want to thank Representative Breinert first for her honesty and directness, but I'm concerned about the chair's mischaracterization of Representative Bill's and Representative Fabian's union. They do have a voice in what their dues are. They have a voice on the local level. Now, I believe Representative Bills is a full member of Education Minnesota. I don't know the situation with Representative Fabian, but they do have the opportunity to be involved and have a voice on setting their local dues. They do have the opportunity to be involved and help set the dues on the state level. They even could go to national conventions if they so chose. So your characterization that they have no voice in that is inaccurate. In addition, they're not even compelled to be members of the union. They could fair share instead, and I would grant you they are not allowed to be freeloaders and receive all the benefits of the union contract and pay nothing, but they are not required to join the union. So I'm concerned about your mischaracterization.
Representative Bills, to that point, as we go.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I sure do appreciate what Representative Greiling and Representative Dabney have said, but you know, I don't feel offended as a teacher. What offends me as a teacher is that in terms of staff development, this is just me speaking. I'm not speaking for all teachers, though some might be like me. I take an incredible amount of pride in my classroom, and I take an incredible amount of pride in my economics curriculum that I've developed. I've spoken before. I do not have a degree in economics. I have a degree, you know, a BA in history and a Broadfield social studies degree. So what happened is I started teaching economics 14 years ago and became very passionate about it. And if not, my kids go and compete at the Minnesota Econ Challenge. We always bring home a trophy. I spend hours developing my curriculum, reading. I don't read fiction anymore. I only read economics, and that's what I do is develop my curriculum. So what offends me sometimes, all the time, what offends me personally is the whole step in lane of how I'm paid. That's what's offensive to me, that I can pour time in, and I used to dress professionally every day, go back and ask my students. I used to wear a coat and tie every day, and still, until finally with coaching, it just became too much. So certain things just started falling away because I started to realize, you know what, it doesn't matter how I dress, I get paid the same. It doesn't matter if I look professional, I get paid the same. You know, and you start seeing how that can encroach into possibly other people's thoughts as well, and I hope it doesn't. I hope we always pour what we do into our classroom. But I could have some effect on my union dues if I show up. I understand where that majority and minority is in terms of my opinions on what we should pay for dues or if we should be conscripted into paying dues. I actually had a point, you know, to in how this whole thing got started, and it feels very much like a battle among family members that now you kind of sit in the corner as a kid and you're kind of uncomfortable. And so, but anyway, I'll say it. You know, my question is, when I got out of high school, and Representative Myra spoke to her history, and I really enjoyed that. So just to give you a little bit of background, we did not have the money for me to go to college. And for when you grow up where I grew up, you get you get a pair of Carhartts and a union card and you go to work. And I was in the Laborers Local 464 in Madison, Wisconsin, and I built roads and utility construction and other things, held a sign sometimes on Highway 12 and risked my life trying to stop traffic for dump trucks. So I went to work with that Laborers Local, and then I went to work actually with the Pipe Covers Local 394, I think it was, removing asbestos. But when I wrote checks out, when my dues were not taken out automatically, we went into the hall and they trained us. You know, that's and my dad's a retired pipe fitter, Local 392. I mean, we're a union family, but that trade union was something different than I'm in today. This union takes my dues without me writing the check, and that does affect me. That does work on me psychologically, having been in that union where I did pay dues and I went to that hall and I was trained. That was wonderful. That was awesome. Those guys were great. I mean, the guys that I worked with. There were union and non-union laborers. There were union and non-union pipe fitters. You know, but we worked hard as union laborers because we wanted to be better. And my union, again, trained me to be better. I went to that hall to learn how to remove asbestos, to operate equipment, whatever. And I think some of my dues, and I don't know, I could probably defer to Representative Anzels, who understands unions better, because my dues were spent to train me. And my question was actually in context of this, but I didn't know if Education Minnesota would be speaking against it, is what percentage are my dues, are some of those dues that I pay in used in workshops, used for staff development? So I actually had an honest question about it, if I can, and I'm not trying to.
Well, Representative Bills, what we do? Yeah, I mean, this is the chair brought the issue up, so there's not the committee's fault. What we're going to do is we're going to get back on track on 2%, and we're going to get on topic with that. We got Erickson, Anzels, Downey, and Kelly, and we're going to wrap this. We're going to wrap this up probably in about 10 or 15 minutes. Representative Loon and her testifiers, and then we're going to give the opponents a chance to testify against us. And we'll put you at the top of the list for when the teachers' union comes down to testify in this bill. All right? Is that fair?
Yeah, that's good.
Thanks for the conversation, members. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want Mr. Strom to remind us of when we enacted the staff development 2% set aside. What was the year?
Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, let me just...
Madam Chair.
Or Mr. Chair, I'm so sorry.
Well, I'm a chair, too.
Yes. Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, let me just... Representative Loon had asked me this yesterday, and I put a chronology of this together, so let me just pull that up. We started in 1987 with a $10 set-aside, and that set-aside grew and shrunk in a few years over time. And let me just find the year that we went to 2%. And Representative Loon may actually have that right in front of her.
Representative Loon, can you play beat the staff on the answer?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm looking at the memo here because I had looked through this. Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair, it looks like
Mr. Trump.
In 1993, the legislature replaced the $15 per pupil unit that was reserved with 1% of the formula allowance for fiscal year 94, and that's when the formula allowance was about $3,000 per pupil, so it would have essentially doubled it that year. And then in fiscal year 95 and later, with that same action in 1993, went to 2%. So the year that the legislature passed that was 1993, with the first effective year for fiscal year 1995.
Representative Erickson?
Thank you, Mr. Strom and Mr. Chair. Well, of course, I was teaching all those years because my continuing ed did come on a tablet of stone since I started teaching in 1963-64. But I do remember when staff development came on the scene. And more or less the message was, the legislature says that you have to have this. And I have a life license, so I didn't have to go through any of this, but I took all of the courses anyway because I wanted to know what was the latest thing that was being promoted through our district. Sometimes it was learning how to identify certain legislation that had been enacted here in regard to abuse. Could we identify, whether or not our students had experienced some physical abuse? And so it goes. But to Representative Greiling's earlier point about the need for money in our districts, I would say what we should think more about is mandate, getting rid of this mandate. I mean, districts are going to set aside staff development regardless because they know the importance of improving the skills of our teachers and of other staff. So I would argue that we need to give them that freedom and should always have given them that freedom, because in about 1987, we were embroiled in outcome-based education, and that continued into the 90s, as you know. And then the profile of learning came along, and we were always learning something without a mandate, I think, because of the way education was changing. But I just wanted to make those couple of comments and then ask Representative Loon or any of the testifiers, looking at this excellent chart that was presented on the 2009-2010 self-reported data, I imagine this was to the Department of Education, on the use of staff development dollars and the categories, do we have any study that indicates the positive effect that any of these kinds of activities have had on closing the achievement gap or increasing learning?
Representative Loon.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. And, you know, it's an excellent question, and I know that the Department of Education collects this information, and they have a number of experts on that staff that look at these expenditures and give advice and guidance to the school districts on it. I'm not aware if they have, though, the data that provides that kind of direct correlation. And if someone's here from the department and they have that information, I think we'd all be interested, but that is not something that I'm aware of.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Loon, as you know, I'm carrying the temporary set aside in a mandate relief bill, not because I wouldn't like to repeal it altogether, but I think, you know, I'll do this incrementally or encourage incrementalism if possible. But staff development does need to have a result. And I could tell stories like Representative Bills has told, but they'd probably be even more entertaining about what we did at some staff development activities. But the most important thing is we're there as teachers to improve ourselves and to increase achievement. And so I would hope that districts themselves begin to look, whether this is a mandate or not, at what is the outcome, the result, and the positive result, I would hope, of having set aside these dollars in the past. And I know districts are going to continue staff development in the future, especially if we get a teacher evaluation in place, because our staff members are going to need help, and they're going to need enhancement with their skills and their knowledge. But what is the result? And so I hope we think about that in the future. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
And I did not take offense to your comment. You're just another kind of one of my learners, and, you know, we just accept people for what they are, and you have this kind of buoyant, boyish character, and I enjoy that about you, Mr. Chair.
Great.
Well, you know, you could be my son.
Oh. Thanks. Representative Anzels. You want to top that one, Tom?
Well, at least he's not wearing the same shirt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Hard act to follow. To Mr. Kite, I don't have a question, just a comment. I, too, first entered the classroom as a teacher in 1968. To my good friends, Representative Bills and Representative Fabian, and Representative Ward, I have this feeling that if the 70,000 public classroom teachers in Minnesota had an opportunity to watch just what has happened here with the discussion about laborers unions and pipe fitters and union dues and 2% or no 2%, and mandate reduction or trust or local control, I think they'd break out in a huge round of laughter and a huge amount of disdain, because they know what the problem is.
The problem isn't steps and lanes or tenure. The problem is an alternative licensure or management of classrooms. The problem isn't whether to require staff development with 2% or trust superintendents to provide staff development. The problem is all about money. Representative Downey, no matter how you cut it, you can nip and tuck and trim and prod and persuade and complain and bash, and you won't get anywhere. The end result will be the same. The only way we get where we want to go, all of us, regardless of our backgrounds, we want our kids to get a first-class, world-class education. And my friends in the majority, please start thinking about how you're going to raise some revenue. Because you must. And remember, those 70,000 teachers, their disdain for us in this process is growing. So please give that some thought. And Representative Loon, you're a good person. I believe that you believe that repealing this set-aside is somehow going to result in something better for kids, but it isn't. It isn't going to do anything. So I'm not going to support it.
Representative Loon, you want to respond?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I would say to my friend that I like you too, and I think you have the best of intentions as well. We just perhaps have a difference of opinion on this particular bill, and you know, I think there have been some very good comments raised by members here in this discussion on staff development, and you know, what I'm hoping to bring to the table with the discussion of this legislation is, again, just trying to look at helping our school districts achieve the best possible balance in all of the many competing needs for their revenue dollars, and to do the best for their students, and understanding that, you know, every district is different. You may have districts with a much more mature teaching staff. I know, again, the district that I represent, I think it's something like 75% of our teachers have master's degrees in that, versus a district with maybe a much newer, younger teaching staff, or maybe more mentoring and professional development is a necessity, versus, you know, is that 2% best put into that kind of staff development activity versus hiring on more staff, reducing class sizes? I mean, you all know as well as I do what those difficult decisions are. And again, I don't personally feel that I'm able to make the best decision for every school district in the state about what portion of their budgets are going to go to this one specific purpose. And that's my reason for supporting it. Absolutely, staff development is critical. And overwhelmingly, even under the current statute or current law, which doesn't require the districts to do any, they are doing it. And I think it's in a recognition of that. But it's, again, this is a statement saying, I'm not going to suggest to the districts that I know exactly what that right balance is for each school district. So I thank the representative for his comments.
Members, at 1:30, we're going to give the opponents a chance to make their presentation. So we have Downey, Kelly, and Quam, but the door is closed. And if any of you three, if either Representative Downey or Kelly go too long, then Representative Quam, be mad at them, not me, okay? Representative Downey.
Mr. Chair, I need a good 15 minutes for this. No. I originally raised my hand to try and respond to Representative Breinert's question about what happens in the private sector. And one of my observations since coming down here is comparing the environment between my previous business, a management consulting and accounting firm, and what I hear so often coming from educators and people in the teaching profession. And So in my business, we had an amount, usually somewhere between maybe 2 and 8% of a person's salary, depending on where they were and what we were trying to accomplish with them that year. And it was always on a per-person basis, and we had a two-week-per-year CPE requirement. And so we mapped out a plan for every individual in terms of where they were, where they wanted to get, how are we going to help them develop, you know, what was that development going to accrue back to the business, and how would it help us help our customers. And so because of the fact that it was very much a free will environment, they were there working of their own free will, and we had hired them of our own free will, it was a 1 + 1 = 3 conversation. And what strikes me so often when we get into these conversations is that it almost seems like, because we don't trust the situation or the circumstances or the players, that we're going to prescribe everything. And I think that's one of the unfortunate outcomes of taking a profession, teaching, which I would compare very much to what I used to do, and having it governed so much from a top-down organizational structure that gets defined on it, and the process gets defined, and then it's all collectively bargained, and all of a sudden everyone's in a straitjacket. And so then we do these kinds of things, and we put these kinds of rules in place, thinking that somehow that's the solution. And I think just unshackling all of these things, the teachers and the administrators and the local districts and the school boards and the parents, that's the solution. And people gravitate towards the right thing because it's the right thing. Nobody told me I had to invest $4,000 per year in the people that we had. We just did it because it was the right thing. It was good for them, and it was good for us. So I really think Representative Loon's bill, in one small step, is breaking down those shackles and allowing people to be the best they can be. And I would fundamentally disagree with some of the characterization, Representative Van Zelt, that you made, that everything we're doing is tearing apart and slashing and attacking people. Frankly, I think almost everything we're trying to do is to empower people, give them a chance to participate in this really big challenge that we have, to empower state workers, to empower teachers and school districts and school boards and kids. And I think if you ask most teachers and said, what's the biggest problem? It's not money. If it were money, we'd all be open and rolling our kids to the highest per pupil funding districts in the state, and we're not doing it. I think it's the fact that we're asking our schools to compensate for all of these problems that we face in society, and we're asking these schools to raise our kids, to feed our kids, to teach them English, to give them basic skills, to sit still in a classroom, to behave, to not bring weapons, and we're asking our teachers in this stifling environment to do all of that for us. And I think that's the fundamental question we got to ask, not how much money we can throw at the problem.
Representative Kelly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess my response was also to Representative Brainerd asking the question about the private sector and set aside. And I think this is just a great example, because Representative Downey's business and would do it one way, maybe set aside a specific amount. I can tell you in our business, we basically invest in the tools. We invest in the tools for our staff, and we fully expect our staff to take advantage of those tools and to enhance their skills so that they can perform at a level they want to. Maybe it enhances a position or something. So I appreciate Representative Loon bringing this forward, because we're not suggesting that schools don't do staff development. We're just suggesting that maybe we do it a little bit more like the private sector. It says give opportunities out there. Give opportunities to the staff to find the tools that they like and to enhance themselves and their position. So nowhere in here does it suggest we don't want staff development. We just suggest the responsibility might be on the individual a little more, but the only other thing we would do, if there's a specific issue that we need to address in a business environment, certainly we invest the time and resources to adjust to speak to certain topics, for example. And I would fully expect that the education world would do the same.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Ansel, I'm just a humble farm boy, and I might not be up on all of this with your years of experience, but when I look at, it's not just a dollars situation. I was educated in a public school that there are only three school districts that get less per pupil funding, but it's world class. It's a blue ribbon school, nationally recognized this year. And I think it gets to empowering and getting rid of the things that fetter our local districts and being able to do the best that they can do and allowing them the options. And I'm looking at this chart from 2003-04 through 9-10, and I did notice that in some of the notes that the 2% was suspended in 2010, fiscal year 2010-2011, and so looking at this, I'm assuming the fiscal year 2010 includes the 2009-10 school year, since there was a decrease in spending. But I look over this six-year period, and my math comes up with 45% increase over 6 years, even with that last year being when they weren't forced or mandated to spend the 2%. So I'm looking at that the districts know what they're doing, that I trust in the professionalism of the superintendents, the staffs, the people who have committed, in many cases, decades to educating and helping the children of our state, that they will do the right choices. But I always felt that allowing them that option and more freedom to do the appropriate actions of what are needed in their district is best, and that this indicates that the world and the sky do not fall when you aren't telling them you absolutely have to do it in our vision, and they're given that free choice. And I have no problems with this piece of legislation empowering those wonderful professional people in our state, because they know far better than I what they can do, and that's why I support this.
Thank you, Representative Quam. Representative Loon, thank you for getting your testifiers. We want to give fair time to the opponents as well, unless Representative Ms. Allswager is here to testify in favor of the bill, which I don't think so. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jan Allswager, representing Education Minnesota, and I must say that this was one heck of an anticipatory set in terms of getting ready for this testimony. And those of you teachers understand exactly what I'm saying when I make that statement. Representative Downing, you made the comment about empowering teachers. If you really want to empower teachers and all educators, you will oppose this bill. Education Minnesota opposes this bill because, please listen very carefully, Education Minnesota, our teachers, our education support professionals value the professionalism of teaching. We always are striving to improve our efforts to increase a student's academic potential. Staff development is one of the very best tools to do that. Let's just put it out here on the table. What does this bill really do? This bill takes away the teachers' and the educators' voice in determining what is important in staff development. This bill is not about saving or helping the Minnesota budget deficit. It does nothing to take care of that. And frankly, if districts are already spending as much money as this report supposedly says, then it's not saving any money there either. So really what this bill is doing is taking away the voice of the educators, those people who are closest to the students, who can probably be the best people to tell you what they need to do to improve their own skills, to improve their own instruction for the benefit of kids. There are two main sections of law related to this bill, 122A.60 and 122A.61. Usually we talk the most about 122A.61. 122A.61 is the set-aside. That's the money. I want to review how that works for everybody. The current law is, well, except that it's suspended for 2 years, so next year the current law will be that a school district must reserve 2%, a tiny little 2%, for staff development. 50% is sent to the sites where a majority of teachers make up the committee. 25% is held at the district for district-wide staff development needs, and another 25% is held by the district for innovative programs that they can send out to the district, send out to the buildings. Let me also remind you of the current law. You may each year have a vote where the majority of the teachers and the majority of the school board may waive that 2% set aside all the way to zero or anything in between. What does that do? It forces a discussion between the staff and the district about the staff development needs of the teachers. If a staff says, no, we really don't think it's a good idea to reduce the 2%, let's say to 1%, the district would say, well, we're in a tight financial situation. Why don't you want to do that? They may say, because we have a math curriculum coming in that is so new, it is challenging, we need to be the best prepared for our students. And we want in-service, we want training. Here's a little irony. Many of you, I believe, would say that, in fact, some of you support a wage freeze. You would prefer not to have any more money in negotiations, or, excuse me, in percentages for the contracts for teachers. If teachers decide that they do not want to waive the money and that they think that 2% should come out of the budget for staff development, do you understand then that, and this is what we are advocating for, that we have that opportunity to have that discussion, that there is less money on the table for negotiations. Teachers are making a professional decision that staff development or their improvement of their instruction is more important than the increase that they get in negotiations. The law is working now. The largest teachers union in the state actually approached the district a year or two ago and said, I think that we should reduce the staff development set aside. Tell me which districts have approached the teachers and the teachers have said, absolutely, no way. Where is the problem? I haven't heard one district where it is a problem. That goes back to my original statement. What is the problem? The problem is that some want to take the voice away from the teachers about what they need in staff development. Going back to the 122A.60 and the 122A.61, I want you to understand that if you take away the 122.61, which is the dedication of the money, you then are saying in this bill that the school board may follow 122A.60. That means there is no requirement for a district to have a district-wide staff development committee. There is no requirement to have a site staff development committee. There is no requirement to have a connection between the district goals and the site goals. Someone asked about what does Education Minnesota spend on staff development. I can tell you tens and tens of thousands of dollars. We have three staff people dedicated to the professional issues related to teaching. We have two conferences where the majority of, so a total of about 2 days, two full days, excuse me, 5 days, excuse me, full days. And that's site specific, and that doesn't count the numerous conferences and meetings that we have that are devoted to the professional issues related to teaching. Our staff go around the state to try to inform teachers, administrators of what the staff development law is, to empower them to make decisions about what a school district can do to better their staff development plan. Education Minnesota does not support some of the things that you have, some of them have mentioned that may have happened at one point. We do not support drive-by workshops where someone looks at a list and says, I think I'd like to go to St. Cloud and take this workshop. Education Minnesota supports a quality staff development plan decided at the district level and at the site level. And it's evaluated based on looking at student data, looking at test scores, looking at where we need to make improvements, and focusing our energy on those types of programs. There are some programs that benefit from staff development. Do you think that QComp is important? Do you think that curriculum adoption and servicing our teachers so that they know as much as possible about a new curriculum is important? Mentoring, induction, all of these are related to staff development. Someone made the statement that in a time of more accountability, it is a little ironic that we would be taking away the voice or the funding for individuals who are going to be impacted. Let's say teacher evaluation. I'm guessing we're going to have some kind of teaching evaluation bill come out of this session. And Education Minnesota will support some quality teacher evaluation programs. We think that should happen. So if a teacher is in need of improvement, where is the staff development for them? If you take away the funding, there is no requirement for the staff develop the good staff development law and the process and the plans that we have. I just want to close by saying that our teachers view their career very seriously. They want to do the absolute best for kids. And we, as teachers, need constant professional training where we can help identify our needs, whether it's at a subject area, a grade level, a building level, or a district level. If you support this bill, you're taking away the voice of the educators. You're taking away all the wonderful requirements related to what the staff development law has to follow. And I think it would be a very sad state. We understand that last year you did the 2% suspension. We didn't support that. This is all about money. It's about quality. This is not going to solve the Minnesota budget deficit. It only gives power into the school board's hands and doesn't help teachers have a voice in what they know is important to teach their kids.
Thank you, Ms. Oswager. Representative Bills.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Oswager, I guess, you know, that it was just wrapped it up, and you kind of answered this in terms of how much does Education Minnesota allocate to teacher development? You said tens of thousands. And is the two-day conference, I'm just curious, is that the MEA conference, or is it a different event?
Ms. Oswager.
Mr. Chair, that's one of them. That's one of them. But okay. There are numerous other conferences as well.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Little, let me just say I have a lot of respect for you, and we've met for you, and we've served together in a couple of committees, or at least one committee last year, and then, of course, this year. And I think you're a fine legislator, and I have absolutely no doubt that you're not proposing a bill here that's intended to do damage to teachers, not at all. I do think, however, and this may come a bit as a shock to members, that Ms. Oswager and I are more in agreement than disagreement on this issue. And I was just sitting with Ms. Oswager this morning, Mr. Chair, on another meeting where I once again pushed her and admin, and I will certainly continue to do that. But I just want to say a couple of things here. I think that you know, I heard some of the rationale earlier about why we would eliminate the set-aside, and I really want us to be very careful with kind of our underlying philosophy here. If the underlying philosophy is that because we're going to do that because we're really going to just, you know, allow the individuals as professionals to take advantage of opportunities, and we're going to allow individuals as administrators or superintendents or principals or school boards to offer those opportunities, and I want to suggest that's the wrong philosophy from a body that's appropriating billions of dollars every year, and it has a huge, almost sacred responsibility to prepare our young people in Minnesota to become good citizens. The issue to me, I don't think, is really about that. It's what our expectation is for the experience for our young people. And frankly, I have no problem as a legislator mandating to districts, pushing teachers, pushing principals, that there's just simply some things they're going to have to do. They're going to have to do it on behalf of our children. And I'll do that as I write out the check for whatever billions of dollars a year that we do for our school districts. I have no problem with being a mandating person. I think the frame is the wrong frame here, is what I'm saying. And I do think there is a bit of the cart before the horse here, Representative Loon. I think a more powerful approach for us, and Ms. Salzberg, you are right. I mean, there are teacher evaluation models or proposals that are going to come forward. It's almost become, you know, a given that it's going to happen this year. And I did a little bit of pioneering with that last year. I think both sides of the aisle and both branches are dead serious about modernizing our teacher and principal evaluation frameworks in our state. And guess what, folks? That's going to be a mandate. We're not going to, I hope, anyone's proposing that we do that only if teachers feel like being evaluated, or if principals feel like evaluating, or school boards feel like implementing an evaluation system. And so I suspect that the philosophy might change here in the next couple of weeks. We're going to move from one philosophy to the other, and I think it's really important that we be very consistent. And so, Representative Loon, I do think that the cart is a little bit before the horse here. I think I know why you're trying to do this, and I think it's honorable. I think what we need to have is this decision made within the bigger context. And the bigger context is, what is it that we're going to expect out of our teachers and principals relative to a evaluation system, a modern evaluation system in the state? And Representative Bills, I feel you. I'm not a teacher. You know, at the expense of making my good labor friends upset here, I think the steps and lanes framework does not honor what we should be doing with our children. I think there's a better way. I think it had its time in history, and it served its function. I think it's time for us to move beyond that. It's a very powerful story that you told here. We have an essential problem of trust, Mr. Chair. I mean, I think that's really kind of the issue before us. And, you know, I don't know how to answer the trust issue, but I do think that it's important for us to have the bigger framework, Representative Loon, before us. Before we do this, maybe this is a good idea, but I think it's got to fit that bigger framework of what we're going to expect out of, you know, new accountabilities from our teachers and our principals in our schools. And I frankly have no problem taking a portion of our appropriations and applying them in this matter. I'm not going to apologize as a legislator to tell school districts that you shall set aside a certain amount of money to make sure that new teacher principal evaluation system is effective and is supported with the resources to get it right by our students. So anyway, I was not a question, obviously, Mr. Chair, but I do struggle with this issue. I don't think that we're actually all that far apart here. I think the issue here really is, you know, what are the first steps that we need to take before we take this step?
Thank you, Representative Mariani. And Members, I have Representative Quam, Peterson, Fabian, Dabney, and Woodard. And I think, I mean, if we have time beyond that, I do want to give the opportunity. First of all, are there any members of the public who are here who wish to testify for or against this bill? Okay, seeing none, then we'll take questions right up until 2:15. And so, Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Allswager, you had mentioned tens of thousands, rough calculation, not knowing what your total dues are. That seems to come down for training and staff development for your members of the union as being, you know, less than a percent. And if I, you know, look at what your PAC has spent, that appears to be as much or more. So can you explain to me why this 2% isn't just the union wanting to protect a bargaining chip in negotiations, having been a participating in a couple of rounds of negotiations? You know, I see it more as, you know, if the district is going to negotiate with the teachers, you're giving them a chip in the bargaining as opposed to empowering.
Ms. Altberger.
Mr. Chair, Representative Klum, I'm not sure I exactly understood your question. The staff development and what happens with staff development is it has nothing to do with collective bargaining at all. It is not part of the process.
Representative Klum.
Well, first of all, was the tens of thousands being such a small portion, you know, you're saying 1 or 2% of, you know, the dollars that are given to education. Well, you said tens of thousands of union dues were put towards the training and staff development, and to me that seems a bit be less than a percent, and actually is of a lower magnitude than what the union PAC spends in political activities. But having negotiated in two teacher contracts, I am very well aware that if you put this as the teachers can negotiate down 0.5%, 1%, or all 2%, that's a bargaining chip to gain something else in the negotiations. And, you know, that's where I'm seeing what you're defending is that bargaining chip as opposed to you know, the dollars that I'm looking at haven't been greatly impacted by the suspension of this, and I'd rather have it much cleaner and straightforward for the negotiations and not muddy it up with this.
Mr. Chair, Representative Quam, we feel that it is the choice of the local educators at the district and the union to have that discussion. We believe that they should set aside 2% for improving the instruction, providing professional development for all school employees, but we are not saying that they must do that, and I'm not here saying that they must do that. We're saying that the current law works, and it's up to the local educators and the local district to have those discussions about the needs of the school employees towards staff development and the needs of the district to make a local decision.
Representative Quam, you're done? Thank you. Representative Peterson. Peterson passes. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have a saying in Roseau. It's UFTA. I think we've reached an UFTA here. I've made so many notes, and I don't know if I want to take all the time. Representative Mariani, you mentioned in your discussion an item of trust, and I'm not exactly sure where you were going with that, and I'm not probing in a negative way, but I do have trust with the people that I work with, both as fellow teachers and also as administrators. You also mentioned an evaluation mandate. I don't necessarily, I'm not opposed to necessarily a mandate for what we're discussing here today. But are we going to mandate that they do it, or how they do it, or what they do? That becomes my question. And if we're going to mandate that they spend 2%, why not 2.5 or 5 or 1% or 0? And I'll go back to the word about trust. I trust, and again, we do things differently in a small town, and I've mentioned this here before. We go to church together, we golf together, we go to coffee together, whether we are teachers, whether we are administrators, we are school board members. And I need to be careful, but it works different in a small town. And I'm not particularly enamored with a flat amount for staff development. I think we do an excellent job. And the reason I think we do that is because we do already have some items in place that not only encourage staff development, but almost mandate it. If you've ever been on the AYP list, you know that you've got some work to do. And that results in staff development. Representative Bills talks about taking great pride in what he does. I know that I do too. And even though I've been doing this for a long, long time, I still like to do a lot of what I would refer to as personal development with regards to how I develop my curriculum, how I go about my scope and sequence, and all those types of things to reach the goals that I think that my students need. Now, going back to staff development, we are in a constant battle for students in most of the schools in my district. With open enrollment in my town, in Warroad they have Marvin's, in Roseau we have Polaris, in Thief River Falls they have Arctic Cat and DigiKey. When you bring people to town who may be coming to work at Polaris as an engineer, one of the first things that they want to do is stop in the school and see what kind of an education is my child or my children going to get. And so it's in our best interest at Roseau High School and at Thief River Falls High School and World High School to make sure that they have the very best educational experiences available for people who are trying to move to town. And not just them, but we also care deeply about our students who have lived there their entire lives. And we want to provide for them the best educational experience that we can. So I have great confidence in our staff. I have great confidence in our new administrative team. We have three brand new principals throughout our school this year, a new high school principal, an elementary principal, and an assistant principal. These people do a great job, and we can continue to do a great job without having to have a 2% mandate. We've proven that in the past, that you don't have to have a mandate for a set number of dollars. So that's my comment. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Fabian. Representative Dabney.
Oofta.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got a couple of snarky political comments to make, but I thought I'd actually try to get us back on the bill. Representative Loon, can you explain the rationale for the deletion of lines 3.21 through 3.25?
Representative Loon, it was on Representative Dabney, can you just, for my sake, not for Representative Loon's, but can you repeat the lines again?
Certainly. Lines 3.21 through 3.25.
Representative Loon, have you found that portion of the bill yet, or if you'd like, I can reference Mr. Strom or Mr. Grove?
I have. I'm just reading over the section, Mr. Chair.
While you're doing that, do you mind if I have Mr. Strom or Mr. Crow cover it? Or do you want to do it?
No, certainly.
Mr. Crow, Mr. Strom?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dabney, as was pointed out during the hearing, the staff development activities in 122A60 are interwoven into a number of statutes, including the QCOMP statute and some others. By eliminating the funding in 122A61, a choice can be made about whether the existing staff development framework in 122A60 should be repealed as well, or if not, then those references where the funding is keyed off of the where the other sections are keyed off of the funding need to be addressed. And in this case, paragraph B, starting on line 3.21, is really just dealing with those activities
that can be counted for staff development revenue. Since that set aside no longer exists, that language isn't necessary any longer. That language only matters if 122A61 exists.
Representative Dabney?
Mr. Chair, and it looks like you're off the hook, Representative Loon. Mr. Strom, since I look further down the page on lines 3.28 and going on, it looks like there's still a report required for what districts are doing in staff development.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dabney, that report would be required if the district chooses to implement a staff development plan under this section. So it's up to the board whether they would choose to do that. So essentially, and this language, if you look at back on page 2 in section 3 on line 2.24, starting actually 2.21 through 2.24, mm-hmm. essentially what it's saying is the whole staff development regime now becomes at the school board's option, and if it chooses to implement a staff development plan under this section, then those conditions, including the reporting, apply. If it chose to do its staff development outside of those sections, then the reporting requirements would no longer apply.
Representative Dabney?
Last question. Mr. Strom, would the deletion on 3.21 to 2.5 allow a district to count field trips as staff development when they do their report, since they are prohibited from counting that sort of activities and other activities in the section that's being deleted?
Mr. Strom?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dabney, in my read of that, I think the sole issue really is that time financed with staff development revenue, and that time would no longer be financed as that. If the district were now to fill out a staff development report, still agree to the mm-hmm. conditions of 122A60, then arguably they could include, I would think they could include whatever activities that otherwise fit their plan, but there's still all of the requirements about that plan being developed, and so it would have to fit those. But in answer to your question, yes, they could count those if those fit their plan that they've developed and implemented under that section.
Representative Dabney.
Well, thank you, Mr. Strom, and thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my concern, a number of concerns have been stated, but we're essentially also with this legislation redefining what you can count as staff development then. And now my getting on a bus, this used to drive me crazy. I would get in a car in Minneapolis, drive to Buffalo, get on a bus, take the bus back to Minneapolis, go on a field trip with the kids, take the bus back to Buffalo, get off the bus, get in my car, and drive back to Minneapolis. Used to drive me crazy. But that could now be staff development time. My doing report cards could now be considered staff development time under this legislation. And I'm concerned about a redefinition of what is staff development impacting the validity of any reports that we then get out of school districts on what they're doing in staff development and our ability to compare staff development expenditures going forward with past history because we're redefining what staff development is. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. So, Mr. Strom, just so I understand it, the Representative Dabney's point that regarding a plan, the statutory references for what is staff development, where would that reside in statute?
Mr. Chair.
Presuming the change is made, I'm sorry, yeah. Mr. Strom. So.
Mr. Chair, that remains in 122A60. And in regard to that point, the only limitation that's in lines 3.21 to 3.25 is that time can't be charged back against the 2%. So it could still be reported, not to quibble about words here, but I think it still could be reported even under the current scheme as staff development time. It just can't be reported as that time that would count toward the 2%. So those activities that are listed there that I think we wouldn't think of as staff development activities, they're not prohibited from being counted. They're prohibited from being counted for purposes of the 2% only.
So just because I think Representative Dabney makes a good point here, I just want to make sure. So right now, if you were going 2.5%, let's say, above 2%, you could put this on your report right now, but this would have to be above the 2% requirement.
This limit, as long as that were, Mr. Chair, correct, this limit only applies to how that 2% is defined. It doesn't apply to what uses you can do. Instead, those are conditioned on the development of and adoption of the plan, and so they'd have to be in the plan to count, but those are based on the plan, not on the 2%.
Representative Loon, did you have any comments on this?
No, I think, you know, that's been thoroughly explained by Mr. Strom. And again, I think it's just an effort to conform the statute and the drafting to the intent to eliminate the 2% set aside, not making a judgment on what's being counted.
Ms. Alsager?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this does highlight the issue between the 122, 8.60, and 6.1. Education Minnesota supported this language when this was first put in, 3.2 and 3.25, because it was reported to us across the state that in the staff development report, a number of activities were being included in the staff development expenditure report that we did not believe were quality staff development expenditures. We wanted these expenditures to be focused on improving instruction and helping to develop our teachers and staff more professionally. And I want to also point you to lines 2.20 to 2.24. Once you eliminate the 0.61 portion of this law, you don't have to do any of 122A.60. It's all may. So you will be removing the requirement on lines 3.10, effective staff development activities. You will be removing a requirement that there's a focus on the classroom and research-based strategies. About enhancing teacher content knowledge, aligning state and local standards, because it all now is a local school board decision. They may choose to do this, but they do not need to. That is the importance of connecting the two.
Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just intrigued by your comments about the $155 million in 2008-2009 being a tiny little amount, being the 2%. What is it that you think is the right amount? What is the magical number here? Why is 2% magical? Because as I would echo the comments of some of the other private sector folks here that every individual is different. Every sort of organization is different on how they look at staff development. I was very heartened to hear when Representative Erickson was talking about the self-development, the fact that teachers I know are very interested in development and are doing that on their own time and are finding different ways to do that. And this seems to be pigeonholing them into that position. So what number, why is 2% magical, and what number would be the nirvana number?
Ms. Halsweiger.
Mr. Chair, Representative Woodard, I think that's an excellent question. You know, over the years, over the 20-plus years, that is the magical number that people agreed upon. I think it would be very healthy to have a conversation about what is included in the staff development expenditure report, because you could have a 2% number that would be equal to a real quality 1% number. If you're counting just the salaries of individuals while they're attending a meeting, that can really bump up the number. If you're talking about purchasing equipment, if you're talking about transportation, or are you talking about just the expenses above and beyond what your normal costs are? And in these staff development expenditures, we believe that most of the time they're actually counting the teacher's salary in part of that. That really makes the number seem higher than it is, because we know that we're not spending 2% above and beyond what is normally spent by a district. Otherwise, we'd have very expensive consultants coming into districts and spending a lot more, and we're not doing that. So I would welcome a discussion about what should be included in a staff development expenditure report and really nail down what does constitute in a legitimate expenditure.
Just a quick comment. I know we're running out of time here. Thank you for that clarification, because I did think $155 million on some of the training I've seen and some of the, you know, in the private sector as well as teachers who tell me about their training. It seemed like an awfully high number, so I appreciate some of that clarification on that. I do fully support this bill. I think it is exactly what our school districts are asking for, and it allows the local control. And I think the school boards and the staff and the teachers all together make these kinds of determinations, and this is exactly what we were sent here to do. So I appreciate you bringing it forward, Representative Bloom. Thank you.
Before we call on Representative Dietrich, I am told by staff that we actually never formally moved the bill. So Representative Loon moves, you did not amend it, did you, Representative Loon? That House File 442 be laid over for possible inclusion in a later bill. Representative Dietrich.
Thank you. And my question is for Ms. Alschweiger. When we're, you know, we're talking about this 2%, 2%, 2%, and so I really needed to drill down and figure out what this meant for my school district, because we're talking about it in terms of, you know, I think, like the system looking like it could be crumbling, and or we are picking away at something really crucial to something that is one of the building blocks of a good educational system. And so as I was doing that, I thought 2% doesn't seem like much, especially when in the fall my school district will be going out for a renewal of a levy for $40 million plus. If that levy does not pass, that is what real crumbling of a school district looks like. We will be laying off teachers, hundreds of teachers. We will be eliminating programs. And to Representative Greiling's point, I really wish that we weren't just talking about 2% of the education funding. I really wish that we were finding a solution to keep teachers in the classroom. That's not the discussion at hand. The discussion at hand is 2%. So what I need to ask, well, so I was going to double check my math, and it was close. For Anoka-Hennepin, as we all know, the largest school district in the state, that would, the 2% set aside would be projected for 2012 would be about $4.5 million. Miss Alschweiger, you talked about that being more money on the bargaining table. I am a little dismayed why we did not mention or even throw out the option for it. Does that not, could that not be used for retaining teachers in our classroom?
Miss Alschweiger.
Mr. Chair and Representative Dietrich, absolutely. I mean, in the whole negotiations process, often discussions and agreements are come to that are hard freezes, soft freezes. In fact, Lakeville is a classic example where they made decisions about freezing some salaries, not having increases, to make sure that they didn't cut as many teachers as they have to. And it all goes back to Representative Greiling's comment. We should be talking about funding for education versus what can we cut. I think everyone at this table believes that staff development is very important. And keeping the teachers in our schools is very important. And yet what we're doing is cannibalizing the system, figuring out what can we cut. And that isn't in the best interest of our kids.
Representative Dietrich?
Thank you. So the way that I look at this, putting $4.5 million as a set-aside for staff development versus cutting teachers. And I hope that... and so for me, it isn't even a decision. I know exactly where my values and my allegiances lie. So I just, it's an unfortunate situation, but I will be supporting the bill.
Representative Ms. Alschweiger.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dietrich, you know, and I also think, in addition to some of the comments that you made, you know, we've got a program, QComp, out there, and I am really concerned about the teachers that are thinking about going into QComp, and if they know that that staff development can't be counted upon to help them improve through the QComp process, what happens to the support of that program? So this is all about looking at creativity and making sound financial decisions, but for the benefit of our students.
Representative Loon, do you have any closing comments?
Just very quickly, Mr. Chair, I know we're out of time. I just wanted to thank the members for a really thorough discussion of this issue. I wanted to especially thank Representative Mariani for his kind comments. And what I took away from that, and I think we are I took away from the discussion, I think there's a larger measure of agreement here on, and maybe some disagreement on specifics in this. So as the bill is proposed to be laid over, we'd have an opportunity to talk about those things. Again, I just, I'm approaching this because I, again, through our discussion, the question is how much, what kind, and who decides in this important topic of staff development, and how it plays into sort of the larger question of other things we may or may not mandate school districts to do, and inputs versus measuring the output of that expenditure. So I thank the committee and would ask for your support.
Thank you, Representative Loon. Before members go, so Representative Loon renews her motion to have House File 442 laid over for possible inclusion in a later bill. Thank you. Just a quick, tomorrow, members, we have, we're calling it Collective Bargaining Day. We're going to have both the management and labor side of the table coming up to talk about the collective bargaining process. I know there's the potential for the conversation to escalate quickly. I know we all have our opinions on the matter, but I just want to make clear if everyone understands. I've never participated in the collective bargaining process. Perhaps some of you have. But I think tomorrow is a good day for committee members to be listening and learning. We're probably going to hold questions as much as possible to the end of the committee hearing, not to give one side or the other preference, but just so that there is more time for members, for those of us who literally know about collective bargaining from what we've read, to actually talk one-on-one with those who have been at the table and experienced this. So that's where we're going to be going tomorrow. Is there any questions or comments from members at all? Hi. Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not about tomorrow, but about a week from tomorrow. We got a tentative agenda itinerary for the school trip, and I'm just trying to decide what I should do because I've scheduled, there's a lot of days on the Hill that day, and I have constituents coming, and I hate to tell them I got a better offer and cancel, but yet I hate to miss a really good trip to schools as well. Why is it the ones we were told that are now finalized, and why those schools, and what, other than visiting a school, which is always a good thing, what is the goal at each school?
Representative Greiling, as we stated earlier this session, one of the things I want to make sure that we do is that we're visiting the schools that are beating the odds. And I would love for us to take a week off and go on a statewide tour across Minnesota. Budget and timing just simply doesn't allow that. So what we're doing is we're picking a couple of schools that are close to the capital that have metrics and a track record of beating the odds. And we want to maybe even get some of the members of the press to shine a little light on this to say that it's not all doom and gloom, that there are people who are getting some great results. So for those who would say you can't do it or you won't do it, no, you're wrong. You can and we will. That's the purpose of the session.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions for members of the committee? With that, we're adjourned. Thank you.